KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Yeah, I just did hear from the superintendent that, yeah, she got caught in that traffic and is turning around. But we also have in the studio with us Park City School Board member Andrew Kaplan, along with Business Administrator Todd Halber. The results of the 1,100 responses from the Park City School District Master Planning Survey have been released, and they were discussed at yesterday's board meeting. And just to recap, good morning to both of you, Todd and Andrew.
Good morning.
I guess really the results. Anything surprising to you? Because I think what I kind of read briefly looking through them is not too much surprise. I mean, there was overwhelming support. 85% of those who filled out the survey want to move ninth grade into the high school. I guess what wasn't clear is whether we go with one high school or two.
Well, actually, that one was pretty pretty clear in that people wanted to keep the high school in the current location, and I think the majority wanted to have one high school. I think there was a good deal of support, somewhere around 25-30%, to also have or to consider a parallel program of STEAM/CTE. And so I think that's one of the things that we're going to be looking at. What we were happy with is some of the things were narrowed down. What we were able to kind of eliminate. And again, the survey results were in line with the feedback we've gotten from, you know, throughout this process. So there weren't, you're exactly right, there weren't a lot of surprises. It was more just validation. Ninth grade should be in the high school. There was a lot of support for K through five being together, and then 6, 7, 8 being together. There was a lot of support for the high school remaining on Kearns. And again, I think now we're going to narrow those decisions down to, okay, what does the high school look like going forward? Are we going to be building a wing for the ninth grade that's traditional model? Are we going to be doing something that's a little bit more progressive in terms of STEAM/CTE? In the middle years, are we going to be doing one large middle school, so an addition to Ecker? Will there be two? Will one of them potentially be a different type of programming? You know, these are the conversations and the things we have to look at, and we have to really price them out. And that's the next step, is we're having the architect firm that we've worked with, GSBS, really come to us with some prices. And we're going to have a work session in 2 weeks. We'll have a lot of the price iterations at that point, and then we're going to be able to have a discussion. And then most likely have another couple different ways for the community to give us feedback again as we continue to narrow this process down. So it's going to be an iterative approach. We're going to want to have the community continue to be very involved, and we're thrilled with the number of responses, but it's not over. And, you know, we continue to hear from a lot of people who have some very interesting ideas and concepts, and, you know, there's other things in play, such as partnerships with other municipal entities. And, you know, one of those potentially is in the early childhood education side. So that's one that we didn't spend a lot of time on last night. But what was clear was there's a demand from the community to have early childhood education, so pre-K, as close to home as possible. Now, what that means is that we're either going to need to build annexes onto our existing elementary schools to add for pre-K, or potentially a centralized early learning center, or a hybrid. And, you know, we've started to have some discussions with the city about, you know, shared use facility on Kearns and things like that. And so those are going to continue, and we'll keep the public updated as we have more pricing and information.
Yeah, I think what I read, though, that there was not a lot of support for one centralized. They would prefer.
I mean, correct. I think it's, you know, and there's also, you know, but then there's a cost issue, right? And we know that, you know, it's going to be a lot more expensive to, you know, build wings onto every school than it is necessarily to build a new facility that could be shared for other uses. And so we're going to really have to do some hard thinking and look at the numbers, and then also talk to our community partners, such as the city, Basin Rec, et cetera, and figure out, okay, what is the shared interest of the community in terms of, you know, and it may be a hybrid solution, right? It may be a centralized facility in Kearns that, you know, would be the kind of the McPolin facility, and then, you know, one at each of the other existing elementary schools. We don't know yet. We have to price that out, and we still have to get some more feedback. But those are the decisions that we're going to have to make in the coming months.
Yeah. And again, only 54%, as I read it, said we should keep one high school. So, I mean, that's it's a majority, certainly, but not mm-hmm. a large majority. So, I mean, do you see us going to two high schools at all, like Wasatch School District has decided?
Well, I think, you know, we can look at it two ways. One is 50, you know, a slight majority said, okay, one high school. Only, I think, 20, and then the other two, the two answers were 25% and 25%. And those answers were two high schools, or, you know, option C was the existing high school plus a STEAM / CTE facility. And so what I think we know is that there's a large percentage of our community that wants to have different styles and options in terms of their education. We have kids who go to the winter school. We have kids who are going to South Summit Academy. We have a lot of non-traditional, you know, learners in our community. And so I think there's a demand for what we would call 21st century learning and different types of facilities. And that's why we're going to continue to look at it. It's not cut and dry, but I think the likelihood of having two identical high schools in two different locations, probably not going to happen. And there's cost issues to that. There's a lot of different reasons, but you know, when we have 25% versus 75%, you know, I don't think that's, you know, it's not eliminated, but it's probably less likely.
Yeah, some of the discussion I heard for the Wasatch School District, I mean, that they were concerned that then they would have different test results because they would have like a CTE school that may have lower test scores as opposed to more of the academic school. They also talked about the need to have two real high schools, you know, and that's what they're moving forward with at this mm-hmm. point. Whether or not the bond passes is another story. But the part of that concern was whether or not they had enough room for students to participate in all that they wanted to participate. Are we seeing that as a problem, that kids that want to be in drama or kids that want to be on the lacrosse team or kids that, you know, want to take AP classes are being shut out because we don't have the room for them?
You know, I think it depends on what activities we're talking about. I think in sports, we're a middle-sized school, so I don't think that's necessarily the case. We, you know, there's high schools in the state that are multiples of the size that ours are, and so that's, you know, that's one aspect. I think from the academic programming perspective, that's, you know, that's going to be a little bit more the case. You know, I heard anecdotally last night from a parent on programming classes, and they, you know, their child had been waiting semesters to take a programming class. And so, and I think we're hearing more of that. There's a lot of demand for programs like PC CAPS and some of the more, the newer style of courses, different styles of learning, whether it's, you know, online, concurrent enrollment, more project-based learning or hands-on learning, things like that, especially as kids get into the older years. And so that's certainly a consideration in terms of, do we want to expand the programming in different ways.
Right. So I do kind of hear us talking about one high school at this point, putting mm-hmm. the ninth grade back onto the Kearns Campus High School. Do we?
Yeah. And then I think it's an issue, you know, for us all to decide, look, we have to look at cost. We also have to look at the cohort size. And, you know, we're used to a high school. We have 368 graduates this year. We have three classes in that high school. So, you know, we're around, I don't know, 1,200 kids or something like that in the high school. When the ninth grade goes in, it automatically goes up to 1,600 plus. Based on our demographic projections, we're going to be pushing 1,800, 2,000, you know, within the next 10 years or so. And so, you know, it's a question, okay, do we want to have a high school that size? Or how do we manage that size effectively within the building? And does that mean that we keep, you know, a ninth grade wing? Does that mean we have multiple buildings so it looks more like a college campus? And there's a lot of different solutions that we're going to work with our architects and planners on. And they've been used all around the country. So we're not going to, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel. All these solutions work, and we just have to figure out which one works best for our community.
So if we expand the high school in its current location, what do we need to, you know, what gets eliminated to make room for that? I mean, are we talking about now needing to move fields and parking and all of that, or does it fit?
I think we have space. We also have, you know, the land at Treasure. We have land at the district office. There's a lot of different pieces of land on that Kearns campus that could be used more effectively. And so we really have to work with the architecture and planning team to figure out what the options are. We have a lot of community groups that are already asking for different considerations, such as the baseball team, for example. They, you know, they're interested in the families and the students who are involved in that, in those clubs, which is large. I mean, there's 150, 200 families involved in that in the community that want to have a year-round baseball turf field So our teams can play, and they did very well this year. And you know, we want to continue to support this. So there's going to be, it's going to be kind of a jigsaw game. What we definitely heard the last time around was there's not a lot of support to move fields, especially to the North 40 side. And we're going to certainly be cognizant of that. But there's space for us, and, you know, we'll be creative. And, you know, again, we have that treasure land. And, you know, when we make the decision that ninth goes into the high school and that 6, 7, 8 are going to be together, most likely, well, then, you know, treasure becomes, you know, expendable finally, and we can do something else with that piece of land and that building. So, we're not out of room. You know, all of that said, we're continuing to look at other land in the community and in the school district boundaries, and not necessarily for the purpose of building a high school or anything like that, but for land banking purposes. And, you know, we've been doing that for 2 years, and we may in the coming months enter into a purchase agreement for something. But we're comfortable with the land at Kearns to be able to expand as needed.
Okay, you had mentioned another work session in a couple of weeks, so that would put it at, what, the 28th?
It's actually June 4th.
Okay,
June 4th. So June 4th at 9 a.m., we're going to be working on some of the master planning options and really having an open discussion with the board and our architecture team about, and the administration, obviously, about, okay, what are the options, what are the costs, and trying to narrow those down, and then working with our communications team to get those out to the community and really try to focus further.
And then what does the timeline look like after the 4th then?
You know, I think as we head into the summer, we're going to want to get more and more consensus. But, you know, again, we're in no rush from the perspective of getting to a bond measure on the November ballot. You know, there's different things that we can do in terms of funding. And, you know, this is going to be such a large project that there's going to be different stages. And so, you know, for example, our early childhood projects, we may have enough money in our capital account reserve right now to get started on those, which we could as early as this fall or winter. And then, you know, look to do a larger capital raise, you know, next fall, for example.
And that would free up some of the room in the elementary schools then that you could fit the fifth grade then.
Exactly.
Without having to
trailers or et cetera. Yeah.
Okay.
That would be the hope.
Less than 1% of the students participated in the survey. Did you feel like you need their input? Or?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And I think if there's one thing that was a bit concerning about the survey results was that was it. I think what we'll do is we'll work a little bit more closely with the schools to make sure that the students all have an opportunity to respond as we go forward and get their voice. We've included the student voice in the project so far. I think this was just a bit of an oversight that they didn't get the survey to the same extent that everyone else in the community did.
So. Yeah, and only about 13% of the teachers and employees actually you heard from. Is that important, or was it really that you needed to hear from the community and the taxpayers?
Well, we heard 13% of the respondents were teachers, so district staff. So that's, you know, 130. So it's, you know, as a percentage basis, I don't know, it's
about a quarter,
20% a quarter, which isn't terrible. That's actually a higher percentage than what we got from the community. So not terrible, but, you know, we'd always want to hear more. And there's more opportunities as time goes on for, you know, teacher and staff voice to be heard, as well as community members and parents.
Are we done with the master planning consultants at this point, or do we need to pay them more to have any more work done? Or?
Well, you know, we'll see. I think we'll see a little bit more as we narrow down, you know, in this next work session. But I think we're going to start to get into more iterations of work with the architecture firm and see, you know, more costing. And then, but we're, you know, we're nearing the end of that process.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a couple more things that we need to check off our list, but we are nearing the end.
Okay, the link that you have online with some of the survey results, is there a link to all of the survey questions that would show each of the
There should
answers?
Be. I think there's only 7 or 8 questions. All of them were presented last night on Board Docs. We'll make sure that the link is updated on the website, but that should be, that all should be there.
Okay.
All the data is out there. And
all
it's
right.
Public.
What else do you want to talk, anything about master planning before I turn into the budget?
No, I think continue to be involved and, you know, give us your views and answer the surveys. And, you know, again, as we've been saying, this is the community schools. And so, we need to make sure that as we move forward, we have the support and the input from all of you guys listening. So
okay.
Thank you.
Todd Hobbard, business, administrator. And I don't have it right in front of me now, but as I was looking earlier at, in terms of the total assessed valuation, it looks like over the last couple of years that assessed valuation has increased $1 billion each year in the district?
About that, yeah, it's gone from 14 to 15 to 16. We're estimating about 16 right now.
Okay, so I guess that's good news. That means that that.
So those are assessed valuations are right. Well, it's a combination. So you have assessed valuation. So that's the market driving prices. That increase doesn't generate money for the school district because of the certified rate process. The new growth is if there's new construction taking place or new development happening, that's what generates the new revenue. And those are the numbers we don't have quite yet. So that's why it's an estimate of about $16 billion. We'll have that come from the county assessors as that work gets completed.
Okay, so once you get that certified tax rate, then you can have a better idea of what we're looking at for a tax increase?
Exactly. Yeah. So we have our estimates right now. So we're looking at needing to raise about $5.7 million, which turns into about $11 per 100,000 of assessed value on a primary residence.
Okay, and is it safe to say it's doubled for commercial and
correct,
second homes?
Correct, $20 for second commercial.
Okay, preliminary operating budget, $80 million. Does that include the capital as well? Or
No, that's just operations. Mm-hmm. So that's running the schools, maintaining facilities, that type. The capital budget's a little over $7 million.
Okay, the budget was basically tentatively adopted, but we still have to come back in August for a truth and taxation hearing?
Correct, with the intent to raise tax revenues, the statute requires us to have a second meeting in the month of August.
All right, and this $5.7 million is basically paying for the whole child programs that we instituted, as well as the teacher salaries for the second year?
Correct, yeah. So we're into our third year of contracts with all our employee groups. And so this was envisioned from the get-go, three years ago. So we're right on track with that, being able to keep all those commitments. And then we have redesigned how our learning academy is coming together so that we can address all of the needs of our students and making sure that we have that continuum of service in place.
Okay. What was interesting, I think, is that you learned that some 70 to 80 kids left the school district to go to the South Summit School District, Silver Summit Academy. Maybe this is something you could also address, Andrew. I mean, was that part of our master planning process? I mean, if we've got, you know, a couple of classrooms headed over to another school district, is that something that maybe there's a desire for here?
Yeah, I think absolutely. We've heard that from educators, we've heard it from families, we've heard it from actions of having kids go to different places. We also have the winter school. You know, we have other, non-traditional styles of learning in our community, and that's certainly something that we're hearing, and I think it's a sign of the times, right? If you look around the country, the amount of charter schools that are popping up, and you know, not only in the state of Utah but everywhere, and some of the highest performing schools out there are charter type programs or STEAM focused institutions, and so we'd be remiss in not exploring that fully. And I think that's one of the reasons why we continue to come back to the possibility of having whether it's a building, facility, or whatever built, which offers that type of programming for our kids.
Yeah, so we had less than 1% enrollment for this school year. We're projecting no growth for next school year. How does that impact in terms of what we're looking for in the future? I mean, you're still standing by your 10% growth over the next 10 years here?
Oh, absolutely. That's looking out 10 years, and so we've simplified it and said, oh, that looks like 1% every year for 10 years. But the actual dynamic will ebbs and flows as we look at those projections and what the development's bringing. What we don't take into account is new education offerings. So we didn't try to estimate, will a new charter school come in? Will a new program be offered by another school district and draw students out of the district? So that's an area that we can look into and perfect as we move forward. But the general growth pattern is still there. We actually grew within the district boundaries. It's just those 70 to 80 kids chose to go to a different system.
Okay. Capital funds are set aside to deal with some master planning programs, what was called the low-hanging fruit. So what are we talking about there?
So we're looking at whether it's simple redesign of classrooms, whether we put movable walls in or realign how classrooms flow, simple projects of that nature, furniture designs, changing the furniture so that they're more mobile, less finished work cabinetry and more flexible furniture items. So those are things that we can address quickly as those education specifications come out.
Yeah, how much are we talking about?
So we've set aside $600,000 at this point.
Okay. And how much do we have now in the capital budget? Because I know that it gets added too.
Sure. So right now when we closed out the books last year, it was about $21 million. So we're sitting in a good place.
Okay. And that's kind of the money you were talking about that we could do some.
Yeah. I mean, Todd has done a great job of managing the budget and being fiscally responsible. And, we're thrilled. And, you know, every time we look at the budget, we're looking 3 to 5 years ahead. And he's done a good job of saving us a lot of money. And so we have more options going forward. And that's due to his prudent fiscal management. And we thank him for that. And everyone should.
Standard base grading, some 20 comments with parents, again, very concerned about the implementation of this. Are we moving forward with it? I mean, teachers, I think.
Yeah, so this is something, you know, it's been going on in our district and every other district in the country for quite some time. I think the concern was around implementation and specifically around the technology implementation this year and reporting. So it's not necessarily about the implementation. Overall, it's about the technology piece. I think it's also about professional development and getting consistency in terms of what the grades should look like and what they're going to look like going forward. The consistent feedback we're getting is that especially the high-achieving kids want to continue to feel challenged to achieve kind of that perfection or that A or the 4 or however it's being recognized. It's a lot easier to do that when you're on a 100-point scale, a traditional scale, than it is when you're looking for mastery. And so, you know, we need to work as a group, whether that, you know, including students, parents, educators, to really come to a consensus around what this is going to look like going forward and how it should be implemented. And we've heard a lot of feedback, and we love hearing from parents and community members at these board meetings. It's a great venue for them to come and give their opinions and voice their concerns and give us their feedback. And, there is a task force that has educators and parents on it that's been meeting throughout the year. They're going to continue to take this in. What we're going to do is work to try to get that, the minutes of those meetings published and also post where they're going to be so that parents who are interested in learning more can observe and attend, going forward. So, you know, we hear that it hasn't gone well, but, you know, as a process, this is something that a lot of the highest performing districts in the country employ to teach their kids. And, we'd be a little bit silly just to say, okay, we're never going to do this. I think it was very helpful to hear from Roger Arbabi, the high school principal, about his perspective and his timeline. And he was very clear that grades are not going away. GPA isn't going away. We're not going to do anything to sabotage the ability for our children to get into the most competitive colleges in the country or to pursue whichever options they want to pursue post-graduating our high school. So there's a lot of confusion and concern about that, but he tried his best to reassure people that, that's not going to change overnight. And, and we're going to continue to work as a district to get this right.
Yeah. So is there some way, though, that we can, or the parents can feel good about the consistency? Because I think, do we need to put teachers into some kind of professional development?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we our teachers are great. They spend a lot of time on professional development. And there's going to be continued focus on this, and it's going to be one of the priorities. To put it in perspective, Mr. Arbabi, pointed out last night in the high school, there's 16 different grading systems currently. Having dispersion amongst grading systems and what an A is, what a B is, et cetera, is nothing new to our district or education in general. And so I think what's brought so much attention is that the rating system changed at Ecker this year, and so brought a lot of spotlight and attention on the fact that there wasn't as much consistency as what is needed. And these are big issues, right? We all agree kids need to know what an A is or what a 4 is or what mastery is, what perfection is. We need to be able to outline that so that parents, students are on the same page. Teachers obviously on the same page as their peers, as well as the students. And there's work to put into that. I said this last night, but we as a community wanted to bring in leaders who could take us to the next level and really take our district from being great to excellent. And, our high school is, one of the top in the state. our parents want it to be one of the top in the country. And in order to do that, we have to do some changes and some regime shifts. And this is one of them. And so, you know, we as a board support the superintendent and Mr. Ababi and the administration team that is trying to do this. We also recognize that there's a lot of frustration and concern about how it's been implemented. And so, you know, we have to balance that and continue to work on it as a group and get better.
Okay. Anything else you want to say?
No, that's it.
Thanks for the time this morning.
Okay. Yeah. Todd Halber, Andrew Kaplan, thanks for your time. KPCW News Time now, 8:37. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, as we reported, Utah Ski Resort set a record for visitors thanks to the plentiful and consistent and ongoing snowfall. In the studio to tell us more, the CEO of Ski Utah, Nathan Rafferty. Good morning.
Morning.
Okay, so do the numbers for us.
Yeah, it was an amazing year. You know, the visits are only part of the equation. 5.125 million visits, which is an all-time record for us. Record this year and third record in 4 years all-time. So our business is doing really, really well. And, you know, what was amazing were some of the snowfall numbers. Measurable snowfall on 111 days this year, and only, you know, one little window of 7 days where we didn't see snow in that whole season. So, I mean, if you were a powder skier, this is your kind of year.
Yeah, well, and we could probably count them after the ski season closed. But so how does this compare then with the best ever record that was set in 2016-17?
Yeah, so 2 years we had another really great snowfall year, and this is 12% above that. So 24% versus last year, which is amazing, but not terribly surprising considering the kind of lack of snowfall we had last year. But what was great was to see that jump up 12% over our previous record 2 years ago, and that was a big snow year as well.
And what we heard from Deer Valley was that they saw double-digit increases at the resort. And, of course, a lot of that had to do with the fact that the Cottonwood Canyons were closed, and so people with their Icon Pass came on over here. But, I mean, can we contribute 12% to the introduction of the Icon Pass? Or is that it's just people skiing more because of the snow?
You know, when we look at, you know, the real dramatic number, and I've talked to some of the resorts, and they saw an increase from their season pass holders of more than 40% this year. I mean, I'm sure you skied more this year than you did last year. I know I did. When it snows, people ski, and it never stopped snowing this year.
Yeah. So 2016-17, was that? We had the Epic Pass before that, right?
Yeah, we had the Epic Pass. Icon was not around, but we had the Epic Pass.
Yeah, yeah. So
it's a much less dramatic number, the Icon and Epic numbers, I think, than the real number is the snowfall and the increase from locals that have season passes. I mean, those are the numbers that really bump in a year like this where it never stops snowing.
Well, you get to get out and ski a number of different resorts. I mean, what's your assessment of the changes to the state ski resorts, given the Epic and Icon passes are here? I mean, and we'll change skiing forever as we know it, right?
Yeah, you know, it's awesome. You know, we have all these different options. I mean, you wind the clock back to before these things were available, and, you know, you were paying $1,000 or more for a single resort pass. Now you're paying, what is it, $800 or $900? If you're in high school, it's a couple $100, and you have access to all these resorts. And you know, next year the Epic Pass, you're going to be able to ski at Snow Basin, Sun Valley just up the street, Icon, have an option for all these different resorts. So for the consumer, it's incredible. You have all these different options. You know, what was also telling to me is that, you know, half our resorts in our state, we've got 14 ski areas. We'll add a 15th next year with Woodward coming online. And we saw record visits at just as many independent resorts as we did at resorts that offer Icon and Epic. So, you know, the skiing is good across the board, even at these independent resorts, for sure.
Did you see the video of the lift lines at Snowbird Saturday?
I did. It was amazing.
Right. I mean, and again, I mean, the fact that people still want to ski,
yeah,
you know, in mid-May, because the snow's good.
Yeah.
But have we degraded this Utah ski product, though? I mean, when people come and see a good 45-minute lift line?
Well, you know, when you get a foot of snow in May and there's one chairlift open. You know, people said that was the shortest chairlift line in Utah, which is true. And, you know, it coincided with a couple different things. A foot of snow in May, that doesn't happen all that often. And the tram was down for maintenance. So they have an, you know, annual maintenance schedule, and it happened to coincide with that foot of snow. I did also hear that the skiing was really, really good. And as soon as you got past that line at the bottom, they had mineral basin open at the top and little cloud, and skiing was awesome. But that picture did get a lot of press.
Yeah. And of course, we have heard a lot here locally with the Icon Pass that the Deer Valley difference, it's not so much anymore. I mean, are we just, I mean, it's really, I guess, the sign of the times. I mean, it's here to stay, and nothing's going to change it, and just get used to it. I mean, I guess what's the message to people?
You know, I'm happy to see different skiers coming over to this side of the mountain. And again, last year was a perfect storm of a ton of road closures in the Cottonwood Canyons. And I'm glad people come over and sample a little Park City, because I think these people are opening their eyes to the great skiing that's over on this side and a fun little mountain town. And hopefully they came into town afterwards and enjoyed some food and, you know, bars and restaurants and shopping and all that stuff. So I think it's all a good thing.
Yeah. So do you think we'll see some of it spread out that we saw this year here, at least within Park City, with the addition of some more Utah resorts part of this?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be really interesting because that, you know, some of the Utah resorts came online a little bit later in the summer last year. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that mix spreads out, and Snow Basin coming online. So adding value to that Epic Pass as well. I only see it as a good thing, and all these options that we didn't have. Sure, there's, you know, anytime you see these changes, there are going to be some challenges that come along with them as well. But I think the advantages far outweigh that. And you know, I would love to be able to have, having grown up in Utah, you know, you got to pick one resort and that was your resort. And now the option to have that and all the great public transit we've got now, I mean, you know, a lot of options.
Yeah, and I know that's something that Ski Utah and UTA push, are their options, you know, to take the bus, especially up the Cottonwood Canyons. I know it's up through Ogden Canyon as well at Snow Basin. We don't have that here. And so what we see are parking lots that fill at 8:30.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's the secret there?
You got to get better at taking, you know, we've got free bus system in Park City.
Yeah, but it's not, I don't know if it's the locals that causing it, or you think it is?
I think in a huge way it is. You know, we do a really good job of educating the people that come here from out of town, and they don't want to rent a big SUV and have to deal with parking that too. I see a lot of them. You know, I got to be better about taking the bus. Our snow report at Ski Utah, if you pull it up on your phone right now, the first thing you see at the top is a big take the bus banner, and it'll let you know wherever you want to ski, how you can get there on the bus. So, you know, a lot of it is education. A lot of it is working with city and county governments to improve the bus service and that frequency. And, you know, these are all challenges we have with growth, but, you know, something that I think is manageable if you smart people put their heads together and come up with some sustainable short and long-term solutions.
5.125 million. Can we do better?
Yeah, you know, I think we can. We had a bit of a soft start. You know, we had, coming off of a crummy snow season last year, there were a lot of people wondering if it was going to snow again, and snow it did. But, you know, our December could have been better, and we got kind of hung up with the way Christmas landed this year, where, you know, we would have rather had, you know, in most years it's spread out a little bit over two full weeks, and I think we could have done better with that. But you know, we're pretty excited about 5.1 million skiers.
Yeah. So again, I mean, to do better than that, I mean, it would just mean the midweek where we want to see the increases.
Yeah, and you know, it'd be nice to see April or Easter fall back in a decent place where we can stretch that ski season a little bit. So there are places to do it, and certainly midweek, and there's an educational component there too, and getting people to ski not just on Saturdays. And but this year, boy, you know, people skied when it snowed, and it doesn't matter what day it was.
Yeah. So all resorts then, you said, that did see individual increases?
I wouldn't say every, but the vast majority of resorts had all-time records across the board from Beaver Mountain to Bryan Head.
Okay. What else do you want to tell us?
You know, skiing's still going. So if that itch still needs to be scratched, you can head over to Snowbird, and they're open weekends for as long as the for the foreseeable future, and they've got more snow now, 18 inches sitting on the ground. They're bumping up against 700 inches total. They've got more snow now than they did the couple previous times that they opened July 4th. So they're looking pretty good for a July 4th ski day. And, you know, so if you still want to ski, get on over there.
Okay. Nathan, thank you.
Thank you.
Nathan Rafferty, the CEO of Ski Utah. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time now, 8:40.